What time should high school start? And the real estate deal this week capping an effort to drill for oil in the Everglades. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Public high schools in South Florida start before 8 a.m., and they have for years. But research finds a later beginning is better for teenagers and their sleep cycle. Miami-Dade schools are considering changing around school start times and having the first bell ring later at high schools.
I still see students in my classroom struggling to stay awake, especially for those students who work jobs, play sports, or deal with difficult family situations.
Also, the state buys land in the Everglades and Broward County to stop drilling for oil. What's next? Your phone calls and texts coming up on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Made possible by Willie the Bee-Man, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. Public high school students across South Florida have early starts to get to school on time. Classes begin before 8 a.m. across the region. The Miami-Dade County Public School District is exploring pushing back when the first bell rings. The proposed changes would impact those high school students. Under two proposed models, they'd begin school either about an hour or two later than they do now. Public high schools in Miami-Dade currently start at 7:20 a.m. Now, the district cites scientific research for considering later school start times for high school students. Experts say teenagers should be getting 8 to 10 hours of sleep because of a natural shift in their biological clocks. So how about these later starts for high schools in South Florida, specifically Miami-Dade, but even your experience in your home when you were a high schooler or if you have a high schooler in your house? Join that conversation. The phone lines are open right now, 800-743-WLRN. That's our 800 toll-free line, 800-743-9576. If you've got a high schooler, what time do you get up in the morning to catch the bus, drive to school to otherwise make sure that he or she gets in the classroom and is sitting in that room on time? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman is with us, and the education reporter from our partner, the Miami Herald, Colleen Wright, is with us via FaceTime. Jessica, first let's start here. This week, there was a town hall that was held by the school district in Miami-Dade regarding this possibility of changing high school start times. Set the scene for us. What was that like?
Okay, so it was the first of three scheduled town halls, although the superintendent has said that he plans on having a couple of more. It was at Crop Senior High School in the auditorium. And the way it worked, it wasn't a town hall where you might imagine students and parents getting up at a microphone and asking the questions directly. The way they sort of handled it was people were asked to write questions on cards, and then a staff member read the questions aloud to Superintendent Carvalho, and he did his best to answer them depending on whether he was able to. You know, obviously this is at the exploration stage, so they don't necessarily know everything about how it would work. And in fact, Superintendent Alberto Carvalho said several times, you know, this hasn't been decided yet, and that the school district really deeply cares about hearing from people, and that regardless of what the research shows, that he said they won't make this move if it turns out that people feel like it will be way too much of a logistical challenge.
Lots to talk about here, and I'll ask about the research in a moment, Jessica, but Colleen Wright with the Miami Herald, let me ask you about the process here. Where is this proposal in the process for the school board?
So a task force was actually convened. I believe there's teachers, students, a lot of stakeholders, you know, people from the county who are participating in this task force. The first task force was held in December. It was not open to the public. I don't foresee this coming before the board, I believe, until April. I think that's when they're projected to announce whether they're going through with this or not, or what the plan could be. I saw two different proposals. It would push all schools, elementary, middle, and high school, up to 8 a.m. But the variable is, would high school start at 8:30 or 9:30? And that is a huge question that affects things that maybe a lot of people don't even think about.
Yeah, lots of calls already coming in. That 7:20 start time can be perceived as an early start time when you're 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, Jessica.
Yes, and not only is 7:20 early. But one of the points that the superintendent made is that, you know, a majority of students in the Miami-Dade School District, which, as you know, is very big, attend so-called school choice programs. So that doesn't necessarily mean just charter schools or vouchers, but also they use the term choice to mean magnet programs, vocational programs, different things that are a little bit different than a traditional school day. And so because of that, a lot of students don't go to that neighborhood school that's down the street. They may have to get on the bus, Superintendent Carvalho said, between 5 and 5:30 in the morning in order to get to school to start at 7:20. So 5:30 is really early.
Yeah, in terms of that wake-up call, that first alarm. What is the research that's guiding this debate locally here, Jessica?
Yeah, so, you know, big picture, a series of prominent medical organizations, including the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Psychological Association, have endorsed starting, especially for high school kids, no earlier than 8:30 in the morning. And the reason is because at the onset of puberty, kids experience a biological change in their circadian rhythms, which essentially makes it so that they're naturally inclined to fall asleep later, around 11 p.m. And then they're also inclined to sleep later in the morning. Like you mentioned, you know, scientists, experts say teens should be getting 8 to 10 hours of sleep every night. And there are serious health problems that are associated with sleep deprivation, including anxiety, depression, and obesity. And the other thing, besides just that national research that we talked about, the superintendent also did research talking to high school students in the district now. So they did a survey with 2,000 students. And in that survey, 75% reported feeling tired during class daily or often. And only 11% reported feeling well rested when they arrive at school in the morning.
Anecdotally, in my house, that's the oftentimes answer to my question at the end of the day to my high schooler: how was the day? How you feeling? Tired is very
you know,
frequently that answer.
Tom, I was at a school yesterday in Broward. I went to give a presentation during a journalism class, and as I was walking in, there was a line of students who were like 5 minutes late for school, waiting to get a pass to walk in. And a teacher said to this one kid, "Why are you here late today?" And he said, "I overslept."
Yeah, we're going to get to your phone calls. Line them up now. Here, 800-743-9576. Your experiences of your high school start time. What was that like? Catching the bus, getting that ride. Maybe you've got a high schooler in your house now. What's that experience like in the morning? 800-743-9576. Miami-Dade County Public Schools talking about the possibility of changing high school start times primarily. Right now, 7:20 a.m. is that first bell. Jessica Bakeman covers education for us here at WLRN. Colleen Wright does the same with our partner, the Miami Herald. Colleen is with us via FaceTime. Colleen, you alluded to two plans that are kind of being discussed right now. And again, this is just in the discussion phase. What do those two plans look like? How do they compare to what life is like now for public school students in Dade County in terms of start times?
Sure. So right now, the whole goal for that Superintendent Carvalho kind of rolled out was to push everyone to start after 8 a.m., right? But that would mean some shifting. So that would mean that high schools could start at 8:30 or 9:30, depending on when elementary schools would start. And of course, middle schools would kind of fall in the middle of that. Apparently, some collateral damage, whether good or bad, would be that Jessica alluded to bus routes. Carvalho predicts that apparently 40 bus routes could be freed up to offer more transportation options to students in choice programs. That is, as Jessica described, students who opt for another school, not their neighborhood school down the street, but possibly a school with a magnet program or some kind of a choice program there. Mm-hmm. And he said it could save up to $3 million. Mm-hmm. However, the opposite side of that is if school is pushed, particularly for high schools, if the school day is pushed later, that means that some money might have to go into lighting for after school activities like athletics or a change in like the school zone signs. Or, lighting for that in the morning. So there are a lot of logistics here, too. There's a lot of moving pieces.
A lot of moving pieces. The superintendent will be with us in a matter of moments here, taking your phone calls, discussing this. Jessica, what are you hearing? What did you hear from parents and students at the town hall this week?
So I did get a chance to speak with one student. Her name is Alondra Board. She's 17 and a junior at American High School in Hialeah. She was concerned about, you know, the superintendent said that this could, if they move forward with it, it could be in effect as soon as next school year. So it would affect her senior year of high school. And she was a little bit worried about how that would affect her after school job, which is something we've talked about with students and with teachers who have after school jobs. She works at Dunkin' Donuts and sometimes starts her shift at 3. And she says because of that, she doesn't think that starting school later would actually help her get more sleep.
Because if I'm waking up later, I'm working later, I'm going home later, I still have just as much homework because that's not going to change what the teachers give us. And we're going to sleep later than we were before.
And she also said, you know, I asked her, why is your job important to you? Like, what do you need it for? What are you, you know, making money to pay for?
Sure.
And she said, you know, for her, she high school is really expensive. She has expenses like prom and graduation and the class ring. And, you know, she made the point that other students and staff members, you know, may need a second job to help out with their families.
Lots of moving parts here. Lots of considerations. Superintendent Alberto Carvalho from Miami-Dade County Public Schools will join us. We're going to take a quick timeout. 305-995-1800. The toll-free line is the same. It works out to 800-743-WLRN. Parents, teachers, neighbors, students, your thoughts on changing school start times in Miami-Dade County. 800-743-WLRN. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. We continue our conversation about school start times in South Florida, focused on Miami-Dade, the public school district, considering a couple of different proposals, perhaps that may lead to different first bells for public school students in Miami-Dade. The district is considering two proposed models. The biggest change would affect high school students. Currently, high school students begin at 7:20 a.m., under new bell schedules, perhaps that could be an hour or 2 hours later. We want to hear from you, parents, teachers, students, bus drivers, faculty members, staff members, neighbors. What do you think about the potential changes to school start times, the effect on rush hour, bus routes, after-school activities, and all the associated work around public schools? And how would the new school changes perhaps change daily routines?
My name is Sandra, and I'm from West Kendall. I am ecstatic about the new proposal to start school later, especially for the high school. My son is in middle school right now. He will start high school in 2 years. And already my husband and I had started discussing how we were going to get him to school for 7:20. If it's not possible for one of us to drive them to school, we would just get a private bus service to take them to school if that time would not be convenient. But we will always find a way to adjust.
800-743-WLRN, that's the phone number. We're going to get to your calls in just a moment. 800-743-9576. Alberto Carvalho joins us once again on the South Florida Roundup, the superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. The school district is the broadcast license holder of WLRN, but the district has no editorial control. Superintendent, welcome back to WLRN.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Among the many different moving parts of this consideration, how do you prioritize those as you are listening to the community?
Well, I'd like to first acknowledge one thing. We have been looking at a couple of models, but we're not going to stop at two models. It's very clear that the more we hear from the community, the two models that we first contemplated, which were quite frankly constructed on the basis of operational requirements for a bus fleet, transporting all students, elementary, middle, and senior, to be able to conclude whether or not we could, in fact, shift the time. We were able to conclude any one of those two models would. Through the process, we've learned a couple of things, that, in fact, there are other possible models that we could look at. I think the perfect solution will come as a result of a perfect balance between the benefits, which have been acknowledged from the medical research for students, balanced out against, quite frankly, a minimal impact to the community, whether we're talking about working parents, particularly our workforce teachers, students' concerns regarding part-time jobs after school or extracurricular activities, athletic activities. The fact that 24-25% of our workforce resides in Broward, yep. If our schedule changes, but Broward's does not, then there will be a problem regarding the synchronicity. And I think that the best or ideal solution will be one that recognizes the medical benefits but disturbs the least number of people in our community.
It's a tough needle to thread, I can imagine here. Is there a possibility that it may not be uniform? Is that within the possibility of discussion?
It's a good point. We have looked at that. Look, right now we have a number of high schools that start at 7:20, obviously, but we have a number of high schools that begin at 8 o'clock. And even though one of the models would have high school programs starting at 9:30, one 8:30, there's no reason why we can't contemplate one perhaps at 8 o'clock, and that's exactly what we're doing. So we first launched two hypothetical models for us to determine, again, the operational ability of our bus fleet to roll out, pick up all elementary, middle, and senior high school students, deliver them to school, and then return them back. Since we do not have three fleets, we have but one fleet. And it is possible that we may entertain different start times for different schools within the same grade configuration, meaning high schools,
right,
or even certain academies within schools.
So a high school could have different start times within the same walls.
It could be possible. Hmm. It could be possible. That idea has been proffered, quite frankly, by some of the stakeholders at a town hall meeting that Jessica was recently. I was asked that. So a lot of ideas, great ideas, are coming from the community. What I want to emphasize is that we're not going to move forward with any recommendation until we have exhausted listening to every single voice in our community. We have had one Twitter town hall meeting. We had one town hall meeting at Crop Senior High School. We have two additional ones already scheduled. I'm going to schedule 2 to 3 additional town hall meetings. Surveys will be available for every single person online, or they can pick up an actual paper at school to do it.
Will there be a change at the end, or could the decision ultimately be 7:20 a.m. start time?
That is the $60 million question.
That's the price tag now, $60 million?
Absolutely. So we, before we started this process, which was launched by the board back in 2013-2014, we have done comprehensive research, not just from a medical perspective in terms of benefit, the biological rhythm that we know is misaligned currently, particularly for senior high school students, but also the experiences of other districts. California, for example, as a matter of state law, dramatically shifted its starting time. A number of districts in the state of Florida. We look carefully at Orange County. They studied it. They took it to the community. In the end, they decided that as misaligned as it is with the medical research, they decided that the inconvenience, the impact to the community was too severe, and they decided to do nothing at all. So we are in a position right now where we are listening to commentary from the public. As we are receiving that commentary, it is a dynamic process. We are actually crunching information and developing additional models. So expect, as additional town hall meetings are scheduled, for us to actually roll out additional models based on the information we're
beyond
going
the two that kind of have been
that's
proposed
correct.
Right now. We've got plenty of phone calls for you, Superintendent, talking about the possibility of changing school start times in Miami-Dade County. 305-995-1800 or the toll-free line 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. We'll begin in Miami with Joe on line 3. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the radio. Joe, you still with us? Joe is no longer with us. I'm going to put you back on hold if you happen to be back there again. We're going to go now to Marcy in Coral Gables on line 4. Marcy, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. My daughter, Amelie, is at Coral Gables Senior High, and I wanted to say that every morning is a struggle. It's just torturous. And I also wanted to mention that one of her teachers started a campaign to have the kids tweet about this subject because, you know, as far as I know, every single child and every single teacher would prefer a later start time.
Marcy, you've got the ear of the superintendent. What start time works in your house?
I'd say 8:30.
Well, that's one of those being proposed, right? Well,
it is one of the ones being proposed. I just left this morning. I do these roundtable discussions with students. They were all high school students, and this time a collection of about 7 or 8 high schools in the north part of the county. And the students overwhelmingly told me that they would prefer a later start time. They expressed the same concerns regarding extracurricular activities, athletic activity, the lighting in the athletic facilities. But they did submit a counter, and their counter was maybe rather than 8:30, maybe 8 o'clock is a good compromise. So I think that's the dynamic process, democratic process that we are observing by speaking with the stakeholders. They're providing us information. Mm-hmm. We're crunching the data. I think what's indisputable is the fact that school is starting way too early. The medical research is quite compelling, and there should be greater alignment between the biological rhythm of adolescents and their ability to learn early in the morning.
So even though an option remains staying the same, it sounds like your intuition, your guidance is to make a change for high school in Dade County for a later start time.
That's a premise that we embarked on this journey with. We knew up front that high school reflects the biggest problem. It certainly is not middle school. It starts way late. It's not elementary school. Young children have absolutely no problem getting out of bed. It's the teenager. It's the adolescent.
But even though that 7:20 current start time still remains on the table right now.
It still remains on the table as one of the options, but it's one, as I said, that is not aligned with available research. The magic here will occur as a result of, as I said, creating a balance between the absolute benefits to students while minimizing the adverse impact to the community in terms of traffic, in terms of all the considerations that have been addressed.
More phone calls and some of those considerations from Miami Springs. Shanina is along with us. Go ahead. You're on the radio now.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I'm actually a teacher in Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and what I was talking about with whoever answered the phone was the concern that a lot of teachers have for transferring to be able to accommodate their own children that are going to be in schools, you know, where the times don't work for them anymore, especially the high school teachers. And just to make that as a, you know, another point that is a discussion amongst the teachers that, you know, we're concerned about being able to transfer in a timely fashion to schools that do accommodate our home schedule.
So that's a terrific recommendation. I had heard it from teachers. And it's one more consideration on top of many others that I think we ought to be rather deliberate in acknowledging and incorporating into our decision-making process.
Related to that, Daniel in Coconut Creek on line one. Go ahead, Daniel. You're on the radio now.
Hi. Yeah. So I live in Broward, Coconut Creek. I trek down to Miami to work. I have a second job back in Broward. So I not only have to get there before the parents, in general, to be on time. Now I would have to be dealing with the traffic, and moving the start time for high school back would effectively eliminate my possibility of working the second job. And given the economics in South Florida, that's a blow. And it's one that I've heard not just from other teachers, but also from students who work second jobs, who those second jobs keep them out of trouble. Because they're busy, they're engaged, they're making money, they're helping their households. In an area where the average take-home income is in the 30s, you know, so it's a serious issue health-wise also on the other spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, we get it. The concerns about those second jobs, not only for faculty and staff members, but also those, in some cases, first part-time jobs for those
Absolutely.
High school students.
That's one thing that we discussed this morning with the high school students, and it's one of the topics that is addressed in our survey, and I really hope that every single stakeholder completes that survey, provides information, fills in additional information, because we want to know, and we want to, quite frankly, analyze the level of impact and be able to quantify it to determine what are the greatest pressure points? Should we move forward or not? But it is not a loss to me. I certainly don't want to be in a position of negatively impact the income of a lot of our workforce members, whether they are teachers, bus drivers, police officers. Secondly, it is not a loss to me either in a community where 70% of our children live at or below the poverty level, many students and their families depend on that supplemental income from their part-time jobs.
Yeah. What about the impact regarding free breakfast, regarding the number of students, the great number of students that do rely on that?
Absolutely. So number one, that allows me to put in the plug for free breakfast at every single Miami-Dade County Public Schools, free of charge, no questions asked. That may be, quite frankly, a secondary benefit of a later start time. We know for a fact that a lot of high school kids, because they get to school so early, they may actually skip the breakfast line and go directly to class. If it's shifted downwards a little bit, it may give them an additional opportunity for them to actually get a nutritious breakfast.
Have you had conversations with the suppliers, with the vendors? And I ask that because you see those supply trucks sometimes making deliveries very early in the morning, sometimes right around school drop-off time as well.
So part of our due process, part of our due diligence is actually to engage at chambers of commerce, the private sector entities, in addition to municipal and county entities, to analyze not only impact to their industry, but also traffic. So that will be part of the necessary conversation before moving forward.
Speaking about the possibility of moving school, public school start times with the superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, Alberto Carvalho, 305-995-1800, 800-743-9576, our phone number. We're also rejoined by education reporter Jessica Bakeman with WLRN and Colleen Wright, education reporter with their partner, the Miami Herald. Colleen, you have done some reporting around these early school start times outside of South Florida in the Tampa Bay area. What was that experience like, and how did that community, how has that community wrestled with this question?
Right. So when I was an education reporter for the Tampa Bay Times, I covered education in Pinellas County. Parents in Pinellas County were inspired to move up their start times, particularly for high school students, when they saw Hillsborough County do it. I believe Hillsborough County now starts school at 8:30 a.m. Pinellas County actually has one of the earliest start times I've ever seen. They were starting high school at 7:05 in the morning. And I actually tagged along with a student who woke up at 4:10 in the morning to catch a 4:45 a.m. bus across the county to get to a magnet program. He was interested in this particular veterinary science magnet program. Pinellas County, I think, is a lot different, actually, than Miami-Dade County, only because Pinellas County is the densest county in Florida, and they also don't have huge, highways, expressways running through the county like Miami-Dade does. Obviously, we have the Palmetto and the Dolphin, the Turnpike, etc. In Pinellas County, that didn't really exist. You're kind of relegated to, county roads and U.S. 19, things like that. At the end of the day, Pinellas only ended up moving its start times like 10 minutes, I think. I think it only went from 7:05 to 7:15. It wasn't that much of a shift. But, there's always growing pains. There were some people were saying the same thing. What about after school programs? I haven't heard of any of that changing because I actually left for this job when that went into effect. But I haven't heard any rumbling. It's just that ended up being really, really early. But it seems in Hillsborough that as far as start times and high school starting at 8:30, I haven't heard any complaints coming out of there.
I just wanted to add to Tom that, obviously in our conversation, the superintendent has mentioned that the school district is open to lots of different ideas for how this could possibly work. When I was at the town hall this week, I had a few moments to speak with school board member Martin Karp, who was actually the person who proposed this several years ago. And something he said was, there could be ways to deal with this in a flexible manner on an individual basis if for whatever reason this doesn't work for you. And that would be to take a Florida Virtual course either in the morning so that you could go to school later, or in the afternoon so that you could leave school earlier in order to accommodate some schedules. And I believe the superintendent said that is not something he totally favors, but I'm sure you could speak to that.
Well, what I said at the town hall meeting is there is an opportunity to consider the Florida Virtual opportunity, which is a requirement in the state of Florida, to quite frankly allow for the possibility of moving the starting time a little later without necessarily changing the last bell at school. It is possible, particularly in high school, if you schedule the virtual offering either at the beginning or at the end of the day, it is possible. What I would not favor is to use Florida Virtual to substitute for face-to-face teaching in the classroom. I would not want teachers to lose their positions or the repertoire of electives to be impacted by this shift.
I ought to know how many periods are in the day for high school, since I have a high school. I think it's 7. Is that correct?
So it depends. In Miami-Dade, you have some schools with 6, some with 7, yeah. Some with 8.
So this idea, possibility that you speak about in terms of virtual school, would that replace a high school period?
It could replace. It could be scheduled, mm-hmm. but the student could take that class anywhere, not necessarily within the, you know, the brick and mortar
right.
School as we know it now.
Yeah. Let's take some more calls. Broward County teacher here, Ted on line 3. Go ahead, Ted. You're on the radio.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm a teacher in Broward County. I'm a parent. I'm a teacher. I also own a mentoring program called the Broward Social Network. And I must say I'm very concerned about this conversation, because is it the next step after high school, college, and the professional world? Why are we over-accommodating these kids? Because you do know that when we say that they can come in at 8 o'clock, they'll show up at 9. And if we say that they can show up at 9 o'clock, they'll show up at 10. We are over-accommodating them, and I think we're not preparing them for the real world.
Ted, let me just ask you, as a Broward teacher, Broward High Schools start, I think, at 7:20. Is that about right, Ted?
We were at 7:20, yes.
Okay, so are you saying your students show up at 8:20 regularly?
No, a lot of students show up late, and we don't have a real system of accountability in terms mm-hmm. of what we do with the consequences of them showing up late. And I tell them, if they were to treat a job like they treat high school, they'll be fired. Well, I really do believe that we need to make them get ready for the world.
Ted, we got your concern. Thank you for sharing with us.
I'd like to address that very
quickly. Please do. Over-accommodating students?
Sure. So I don't subscribe to that position. If we want to more closely mimic how the real world, and I think by the real world, the caller is speaking about folks who report to a job rather than school. Very few people report to a job. The vast majority of people report to a job at 8 to 9 o'clock, not at 7:20. And certainly those who do, considering the number of students we transport to school, which is in excess of 60,000 every single day, when 70% of our students are enrolled in non-traditional programs, that means they have opted to different programs in different schools, sometimes beyond their zip code. Many are riding the bus at 5 o'clock in the morning, as the previous caller mentioned, which means they're getting up at 4 o'clock, as was the case of the student that Colleen followed. That's just insane. There's a misalignment that needs to be recognized and at least contemplate different solutions for it.
Jessica?
Yeah, so, I was going to add that for what it's worth, a parent I spoke to at the town hall made the same point and in fact, used the word coddling, that she thought this would be coddling students. I think that given the information that we have about the brain biology of students, I think that the attitude surrounding that sentiment is maybe a little bit wrongheaded. You know, we need to be thinking about students' health. And also, I would point out that, you know, college students have a lot more control over their schedules, and they can choose not to have an 8 o'clock class if for them it's better to sleep in a little bit later. They're still being educated.
Jale in Miami Beach on line 5. Go ahead. You're on the radio now.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for having this conversation. It brings to a head so many issues. We're talking about how critical sleep is for their physical health, for their mental health. And what about the social pressures? I mean, these kids have a lot more on them, on their shoulders, academically, yes, sports-wise, job-wise, but we also, they have social pressures. We see a lot more kids hurting other kids, either with their words or their actions, and we need to come together. They will make their best decisions. They'll learn better when they are well-rested and feeling good. So I'm glad for the conversation. I appreciate all the effort that's going into having the conversation, the research from all perspectives. And obviously there will be some upset because there will be some change, but the conversation needs to happen. We need to change the culture.
Jale, I appreciate you adding your voice to the conversation here from Miami Beach. Superintendent Carvalho, let me ask you finally, any change to the school start times, would it require changes to collective bargaining agreements that have been made with teachers, bus drivers, or other unions?
In some cases, it may. It's a very important question. We've identified already some areas where we may need to go to the table, but quite frankly, the daily work schedule for our colleagues in our workforce is not dictated by collective bargaining. So the number of hours, the number of minutes is, but when it starts and when it ends is not necessarily.
So that's not the 7:20, for instance, is not specified in that, a contract.
That is correct. That is my understanding. Notwithstanding that, I think that more important than the policy, the contract, is respect for our workforce. And that's why we want to contemplate, consider all of the impacts, quite frankly, rank them in terms of greatest to least impactful, and attempt to make modifications as we consider these models.
You discussed all of the outreach that you're doing. Are you running under any kind of timeline here?
Well, ideally, I would like to finish the listening tour no later than the end of March for us to have sufficient time to bring a recommendation or no recommendation whatsoever for a change to the board by April, May, to then have sufficient time to inform the community prior to the students leaving to their summer vacation, just in case we have, in fact, a model that's feasible to go live for August of 2020.
Sounds like last day of this school year is your deadline then.
That is correct. Yeah. I think it would be critically important to have a conversation, an announcement, and really sensitize the community for whatever change would be in the horizon.
Superintendent, we appreciate your time, and thank you for spending time with us here on the South Florida Roundup. Alberto Carvalho, the superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Colleen Wright, education reporter with our partner, the Miami Herald, with us via FaceTime. Colleen, thanks for sharing your reporting and perspective with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Jessica Bakeman, education reporter here at WLRN. Always great to have you on, Jessica. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Tom.
And just a reminder, the Miami-Dade County Public School District is the broadcast license holder of WLRN, but the school district has no editorial control. Stay tuned. More to come here on the Roundup. The state agrees to buy land in the Everglades to stop drilling for oil. That's up next. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. The state of Florida announced plans to make a big purchase this week. It agreed to buy 20,000 acres of Everglades land in western Broward County. It was land that was slated for oil drilling. The land was owned by the Cantor Real Estate Company. It had won approval for exploratory oil wells to see if and how much oil may be underground. WLRN's environmental reporter Jenny Stiletovich has been covering the story. She's with us now. You were at the governor's announcement this week, Jenny, at the Everglades Holiday Park. What were the reasons for wanting to buy this land?
Basically, to protect the Everglades from oil drilling. This conservation area is, there's no nearby projects, but it's basically in the heart of the Everglades. They're moving water from Lake Okeechobee down to the southern marshes. And if you've got an oil operation in the middle of it, that seems not wise.
Give us a sense of where this land is and what's there now. What does it look like?
So it's about 6 miles west of Miramar. It's out in marshes. There's two tracks. They cover 20,000 acres. The permit was just for 5 acres where they were going to put in this exploratory well, which would have required heavy equipment coming in, concrete construction pad, and all the operations for an exploratory well. So it would have been a sizable operation if you've ever been to Big Cypress, where they do the drilling out there on Raccoon Point.
Yep.
It's small, but it's intense.
It's Collier County, I think, that area is where it's at? Yeah, in eastern Collier County there.
In Big Cypress National Preserve, actually, when you're going down the road, you can see the pipes.
So here in the eastern part of the Everglades, what do we know about oil underground?
Not a lot. When they filed their application, they said they thought there was only a 23% chance of finding oil. This is part of the Sunnyland trend that stretches from Fort Myers to Miami. And there has never been drilling this far east. In 1985, a Texas company drilled an exploratory well but capped it within a year and abandoned it, never used it. Shell Oil in the 1980s did some exploration with these thumper trucks that they use in Big Cypress and never pursued it, so they must not have found much.
Ron Bergeron is along with us now as well via FaceTime audio. Ron is with the South Florida Water Management District. Ron, welcome back to the Roundup. Appreciate your time today.
Yeah, honored to be here.
So the Water Management District certainly plays a role in Everglades restoration projects. You're also a real estate developer. What'd you make of the purchase, given the dual roles and the two hats that you wear?
Well, I think it was a great day for the Everglades. You got to realize that this property is in the main flowway of the River of Grass, which is 30 miles wide and ridges and sloughs where 1,500,000 acre feet a day of water would flow south to Florida Bay. Once we decompartmentalize the system and implement modified water delivery. So to be drilling for oil, not only on the 5 acres that would be impacted, but all of the access roads to get to that location would cut off the natural sheet flow. So I think, truthfully, I want to compliment the governor for his leadership and understanding how important quality of water is to 9 million people here in South Florida.
Ron, were you instrumental in these negotiations? Were you the bridge? Did you bring these parties together?
Well, I was part of it. I think the governor's team, along with South Florida Water Management, there was a lot of people involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the entitlement that they had and the permit they had would have been very difficult to stop. And I think it's one of the greatest preservations of land in Florida since 1974, when we preserved the Big Cypress Preserve.
So Ron, I'm sorry to interrupt. When we spoke this week, you had mentioned that you had talked to the family. What did they say? And I guess I'm curious, this happened pretty quickly. Who approached whom?
Well, I've known the family for years, and we did have conversation. And I did speak to them again at the press conference, and I really applauded them for their being reasonable. You got to realize that this purchase of preservation in Broward County, that 20,000 acres ended up being a little bit below $900 an acre. There's a lot of historical sites, geographical area, and Indian mounds that were built 10,000 years ago by the Glades One Indians. And so there's an awful lot at stake to ever drill hole or oil in the River of Grass.
As you mentioned, though, it would have been difficult to stop a permit that had been issued to allow the exploratory oil drilling. The private owners had kind of every right and had all the regulatory approvals necessary in order for this to happen. Ron Bergeron with the South Florida Water Management District, were they willing sellers here?
I think they were cooperative sellers. And I actually believe with the governor's leadership and the negotiations that took place between our state agencies and the governor, the price was very fair, in my viewpoint. And I think it was a great day for the Everglades and the quality of water for 9 million people here in South Florida.
Now, we should point out specifically, this is, you know, in the sophistication of real estate in South Florida being very high, this is not a signed, sealed, and delivered, closed real estate deal. In other words, the deed property of these acres has not changed hands as we speak here today to the state of Florida. Is that right, Ron?
Well, I think that the state of Florida, it hasn't, but it's being processed through South Florida Water Management, moving forward at a very fast pace. And I believe that this takes all of the entitlements and complete ownership to the state of Florida. So there'll be no drilling in the River of Grass.
How confident are you that you'll get to the closing table?
No, I'm very confident. I have spoke to the family. I have been engaged with the governor's team and Noah Valentinstein, which is our DEP secretary, along with South Florida Water Management. No, I'm very confident, and it's a wonderful thing for you got to realize that drinking water for South Florida is the key.
Yeah.
And
just so we're clear, Ron, I want to make sure this is not an option to buy this land on the part of the state. This is a purchase contract. Is that correct?
That's a purchase contract. And I think there's a timeline if it's purchased.
I think it's June 30th. If you complete it by June 30th, the price is about $16.5 million. After that, it goes up to $18 million.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Ron and Jenny, we're going to take a call here. Dan in Fort Lauderdale has some thoughts on this. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the radio.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I did not vote for this governor, and I just want to say thank goodness that he and the people behind this are making this happen. It is very surprising to see a Republican environmentalist, but it is a welcome change. Thank you, Governor, and thank you everyone who's trying to make this happen.
Ron, appreciate you, Dan, appreciate you adding your voice to that. Where is the money coming from? Do we know, Jenny?
Either the Water Management District, Comprehensive Everglades Restoration Program money, or Florida Forever if the DEP or the Department of Environmental Protection closes on the deal.
Ron Bergeron, what level of importance, certainly you are clear on this, you want the deal done to ensure quality drinking water, as you have mentioned, but the source of the funds from the state, what could a citizen read into where the money comes from? In other words, if it comes from the Department of Environmental Protection or if it comes through the South Florida Water Management District?
Yeah, I don't particularly have those details at this moment. I do know that the appropriations will be made, and I believe the transaction at this point will be negotiated and finalized through South Florida Water Management or the DEP, one of the two state agencies.
But the land will be managed by or will become part of the Water Management District's portfolio, right?
Yes, that's correct. We will have the full title to the property, not just the flowage easement that mm-hmm. goes across the property. So it'll be owned by the state of Florida, protected by the state of Florida.
Do you think that this land could ever be used for an Everglades project? I know right now it just sort of it's part of the flowway and the reservoirs and the stormwater treatment areas are further north, but there is a great need for more storage space and treatment marshes. Is that something that could be in the books?
Well, you certainly wouldn't want to do pre-treatment in the pristine Everglades or storage. You want to do that on the outer perimeter and pre-treat the water before it enters into the protected area, because this particular area is very pristine. It's like it was centuries ago. So all of our projects for storing water and feeding that water to the environment, the ecology, at compatible water levels with the wildlife and the plant communities, all of these reservoirs are being constructed on the outer perimeter of what we are saving. And same with the pretreatment areas that border the Palm Beach Broward line on properties that we obtained. All of that pretreatment is pretreating before it enters mm-hmm. into the River of Grass.
Ron Bergeron is with us via FaceTime audio. Ron is a longtime South Florida developer, South Florida native, alligator wrestler, and, of course, a member of the South Florida Water Management District. He's wearing that hat today as we're talking about the state land purchase agreement that was struck and announced with 20,000 acres of Everglades land in western Broward County. Ron, nice to have you on the program this week.
Yeah,
it's great to have you.
Thank you very much, and the American dream is still alive, and God bless America.
Thanks, Ron. Always great to have you on the program to hear your perspective, and Jenny Stiletovich covering the environment for us at WLRN. Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you.
Finally, in the roundup this week.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
The Bad Boys are back on the big screen. The latest sequel, Bad Boys for Life. It was shot here in Miami and is out Friday in theaters. Stars of the film are Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. The city of Miami even honored them earlier this week, giving them keys to the city. They were also named honorary police officers. After all, they've been serving as fictional Miami cops since 1995, when the first Bad Boys film was released.
Now back up, put the gun down, and give me a pack of tropical fruit bubblicious.
And some Skittles.
What you gonna do? What
That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations is Peter J. Meritz. The director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, and supporting WLRN. The program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.